I don't even know what direction we're going. So help me out. As you can see, I'm going to need considerable assistance with this particular journey. Now, one of the great lost London films has been Babylon. Every now and then I get emails of people saying, where can I get Babylon? Does anyone remember Babylon? Well, you can get it now. For a long time it wasn't available, certainly not in this country. But it's just been re-released on DVD, and we're going to be talking to the director of Babylon, Franco Rosso. And this is a track from the original soundtrack, which has also been reissued. And it's Aswad and Warrior Charge. Great bit of reggae. Warrior Charge from Aswad, from the soundtrack to one of the great, well, until recently, lost London movies. It's Babylon. And regularly, people send me emails saying, do you remember that film Babylon? Why can't we see, why don't we never see it? Why can't I get it on a DVD? Well, finally and eventually, you can. Because it's just being issued this Friday, officially on DVD. And here to talk about it is the man who directed it, Franco Rosso. Franco, welcome to BBC London.
Hello, good morning.
First of all, how did you... It's afternoon, technically.
Well, is it? Oh, yeah.
It is, by now, yeah.
Sorry about that. Good afternoon.
How did you get involved in this project back in the day?
That's a very long story. I was an editor and I'd been working on a lot of reggae films. Not a lot of reggae films.
There weren't that many reggae films.
Well, there was a few, and I think I edited most of them.
Right.
Then I made a film with Lynch and Kwesi Johnson called Dreadbeat and Blood.
Yep.
Which attracted a lot of publicity because it was round about the time of the Thatcher elections, and he's very controversial, as you might know, or his music was then.
Yeah.
And so that got a lot of publicity. And during that time, I went with him, and we were going around all these sound systems. I met Zshaka, who was the sound system man, and I thought it'd be a good idea to possibly make a film about sound systems.
Right.
And couldn't find a writer. So... I read Time Out, and there was a young writer there who wrote a thing about Red Indians. Now, I don't know how I equate Red Indians with sound systems, but he was a good writer, and so I phoned him up, and because I think most people were simply not, didn't know anything about sound systems, didn't know anything about that. So I phoned him up. It's called Martin Stellman, and Martin never written a script, but knew a lot about sound systems, was really into reggae, which was a complete chance, and he lived just up the road again, which was like completely. So I thought this has got to be the guy to write. Anyway, we got on very well, and we started doing a lot of research. Martin worked at the time at the Albany for a part of his existence, bless him, and he nobody wanted, they had a sound system night there for young kids who had their own sound systems, but nobody wanted to look after it because they were all a bit worried about, you know, the sure. reputation. And of course, Martin said, yeah, of course, you know, I mean. And so we used to go, when he was there, I used to go down and we used to watch sound system and talk about what we were going to do. And that's how it came about. We wrote a script. Nobody wanted it, you know. It's like,
was money easy to get?
No, impossible. Absolutely impossible. Went to the BBC. They thought, oh, yeah, we're going to do it. And then they saw it. And we wrote it in patois, right? Because what we would do would be we would write it and then we would get one of the guys in from sound
system. Kind of translate it.
Yeah, and say, is this right? And he'd say, no, we wouldn't say that. You know, no. This is how it goes. And he'd give it to us. So then we'd write it out. So they were going to do it. And then they got cold feet. And this went on for about 5 years.
Blimey, it was a long time in the gestation.
Yeah, and we were both doing other things. We had to. Yeah. You can't live that way. Anyway, it was. It was a long, long time. And finally, somebody, I think, I got an agent, because I used to be a film editor. I was a film editor, as you said, but I got an agent, and she said, take it to the National Film Finance Corporation. And the guy there, Mamoon Hassan, read it, and he said, great, I want to do it. Let's go. Let's do it. I mean, so it was a complete reversal of everything that had happened before. And it was all systems go. And we were kind of literally getting this film together, living in, you know, I lived very near to Deptford where we did it all, right. Out of Lewisham.
I was going to say, where's it all shot? Because it's set in South London, but you can't always tell kind of where it's shot.
No, it's mainly Deptford.
Right.
Mainly Deptford, bit of Lewisham, and of course there's a market scene where he goes to get the records they buy the record that they use in the competition, and that's Brixton, of course. So it's all South London-y, so definitely, but mainly Deptford.
And how easy was it to be kind of to get the confidence of the people you were working with? Obviously, I suppose from the story you've told, you already had some ins. But
yeah, we had a lot of ins, and. Because of that, I mean, I had a sound system in my back garden, literally.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
There was a church at the end of the garden, and every once a week it was used as a sound system.
Right.
So that, again, was another thing. And, of course, Shaka was local to me.
Yeah.
And one of the guys who worked in the sound system, his kids were in the same school as my kids in Deptford, near Deptford. Junior school. So it all built up, you know. And then when the word got round, you know, once Shaka was in, and he said he would do it. Well, in fact, once Brinsley was in, that was...
Yeah, I was going to say, because Brinsley must have been an important one to get involved.
Yeah, he was very important. He was very, very important. Once ball started rolling, people wanted to be involved with it, and it became not easy, but it was certainly it was certainly okay for people, or for sound system men to be involved. So that's how that got going. Really.
How was it received when it first came out?
Pretty well by of course black community, but everybody else it was a bit of thumbs down really. I think people in the know liked it and were excited by it, but
because I remember there being a real buzz about it at the time. Well,
there was for young people, but yeah. nobody put it out on cinema.
Really.
You know, it had a limited distribution.
Because I saw it at a time. I haven't seen it since.
Yeah.
And I remember it more than fondly. I remember thinking, this is, you know, this is a really good film. This is The Harder They Come, set in South London.
Yeah. I think for people who saw it and people involved in that thing, and for young people involved with the music, knew the music, it was great. For the majority of people, who distribute films, they didn't think it would run. Black film, you know, black subject matter, blah, 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 you know, nobody's going to understand this. Put subtitles on it, believe it or not, you know. So that's the kind of thinking that was behind it. And once it had its initial kind of flourish, it just disappeared and nobody was prepared to pick it up and put it out, even though people were asking for it.
I was going to say, so is that why it's taken this long to come out?
More or less, yeah, absolutely, because... Nobody was prepared to... in fact, it was my son phoned me up and he said, Dad, have you seen the... Have you been on email or eBay or any of those things and seen that people are... The DVD copies are all over the place. You know? And I said, no, I hadn't seen it. So I started looking, and, you know, I realised that there was a huge kind of market for the film, and people were swapping it and...
Flogging it,
you know, and everything else. So we started kind of saying, well, trying to get interest, and luckily Icon came up, and, you know, interest... in actually putting it out commercially.
Had you watched it in the intervening time? Or?
Only when he phoned me up.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, so what did you think of seeing it after all them years?
I really enjoyed it. I forgot so much. I forgot so many parts of it that it was a real surprise seeing places, and it was like seeing an old friend, really.
Because one of the things I think about the film, one of the reasons it's important, is that in many respects the scene it documented has kind of gone. Yeah. I mean, that kind of generation of young London West Indian kids who at that stage were still deeply into reggae, still spoke in patois, that kind it's kind of you know, it's all got blown away by hip-hop and all the American stuff, and do you know what I mean? And I mean, I, you know, I'm of that age, and I remember all those kids and growing up with kids like that, and it was a fabulous world. And somehow it feels like a period piece almost now.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, when you consider it was, what was it, 30 years ago? I don't know, was it?
God.
20? I don't know.
30, something like that.
Something like that. Shh. yeah, it was. And of course, things have changed. And I think most probably a lot of it for the better, a lot of it not so good. I mean, at least kids now, there's a much more integrated scene, I think, as far as white and black kids are concerned, and kids mix much more.
Oh, absolutely,
It used to be very separate, you know.
And the kind of casual racism and kind of that was available, that was, you know, prevalent then, is probably not there now, although I don't think anyone thinks we've eradicated
racism. No, because it moves on, you know, because when I was at school, I mean, I fought my way through school. You know, because I was an Italian, right, and made a Greeks, whatever, you know, it was, oh, you're all cowards, your mother's a tart, you know, the whole thing, we lost the war. Da-da. Then, luckily, blacks came along, right? So we moved up the ladder, if you like, you know. Now, of course, the West Indian kids have moved up the ladder again, and underneath them is
Asian kids, or maybe even Eastern European kids, or Somali kids.
Probably even lower down than the Somali. So everything moves up a run, and and the pressure comes off, you know, a little bit. There's still racism. I mean, the big thing then was the sus laws, and now we've got a kind of modern version of it with the anti-terrorist laws, which are just about as bad as the sus, well, worse, but the sus laws were the big thing then, you know, that kids could just be, you could just be picked up for no reason at all in the street.
And that's, I mean, that is part of the story of Babylon, isn't it?
Very much part of the story, and the kind of hassle that that the police gave the kids.
What year did it come out? Eventually.
84, I think.
I was going to say, because we've had riots by then and all that, haven't we?
Not the big one. There was still quite a lot of riots going on, because...
Brixton's gone off by then, or...?
No, it hadn't.
No?
I'm not sure it had or it hadn't.
I can't remember myself.
But I know that people started ringing up and saying, police used it to have a look at it to try and solve problems, and Scarman used it.
Really?
In the Scarman report, yeah. I met him many years later, and he was great, actually. He's a great guy. So that was kind of quite something, really, that he had used it in his report.
What have you been doing in the intervening years?
Oh, been running a film company. I mean, I couldn't get any work after I finished this for 2 years. I mean, I just couldn't get any work at all. Went back to editing, became edited more stuff. And then started making documentaries, which I could get off the ground. Try to get other features off the ground, never could, until I did another film called Nature of the Beast, which was a little bit later. Ran a small independent film company to make my bread and butter.
Well, you must be pleased that Babylon's back out.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It was really nice to see. What was interesting was we had a night where they ran it at the National Film Theatre, and... All the main actors turned up.
Did they?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Martin turned up as well, the producer turned up. Dennis Bavell, who did the music, turned up. And it was like old times. It was like nothing had happened, you know. It was like I'd seen them yesterday. We just picked up where almost we'd left off. It was great. It was a great evening. And it was a real great thrill to see them all again.
Well, it's great for me to be able to see the film again, which is what I'm going to sit and do tonight, because I've only literally just got my copy. I'm going to take it home, and I'm going to watch Babylon, and I might even play the original soundtrack in the car on the way home. And you can do the same, of course, because it's out there, and it's available from this Friday. And you've been hearing about it from the director, Franco Rosso. Franco, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.